This is David's Book Talk, bringing authors and book lovers together in a unique way since 2009. Visit us at davidsbooktalk.com and join the conversation at facebook.com/davidsbooktalk. But first, pull up a chair, relax, and enjoy today's episode. Here's your host, David English.
Hello, and welcome to David's Book Talk. Today we're going to talk to Charlotte Stewart. She's Miss Beadle from Little House on the Prairie, among many other things. Hello, how are you?
I'm fine, David, and looking forward to our chat.
Yeah, and I should mention the book is called Little House in the Hollywood Hills, A Bad Girl's Guide to Becoming Miss Beadle, Mary X, and Me. And it's written with Andy Dembski. Now, let's tell people who Andy Dembski is, first of all.
Andy Dembski is a writer that lives here in Napa. He's written two books previously, and we got together. We met as friends about 6 years ago, and I was telling him stories. You want to know what's your background and stuff, and I told him. He said, you should write a book. I went, nah, never happened. He said, no, you got some good stories. I said, well, you know, I'm not a writer, and second, who cares, you know, who would be interested in, you know, whatever I have to say. So about a couple of years later, I was on tour with Alison Arngrim, who played Nellie on Little House on the Prairie, and she's written a wonderful book. And I just saw how much she enjoyed, you know, talking to people about her book, and she kept saying, you should try it. So eventually, about 3 years ago, I called up Andy, and I said, are you still interested in doing it? Yeah. So we started meeting at Starbucks once a week. And I would talk, and he would write. And then the next week, he would hand me some pages, and I would read, and then talk some more, and he would write. And here we are, 3 years later, with a book, which totally shocked me. But it's a good book. He managed to make sense of my stories and write it in my voice, you know. They're actually all my stories, as I told them. But, you know, it takes a professional writer to really weave the stories together so they have a flow and they make sense. So I hope that's what you found.
Right. Oh, yeah. It's a very, very interesting book. I found myself riveted at times with the different stories.
Okay. And
yeah, it's just interesting, especially with the Little House on the Prairie stuff, because I grew up with Little House on the Prairie, so
yeah,
that made it more interesting, much, much, much more interesting, too. Cause
and so did so many people, you know. I didn't realize until the show was, you know, well into syndication, and I did a couple of events across the country with my other cast members, and I had no idea we were so popular. You know, I was living in Los Angeles, and especially while we were shooting Little House, nobody paid any attention to us at all. We never got feedback or anything, and so I was totally shocked to find out we had so many fans, and dedicated fans, too. I mean, we've been all over the country. In fact, I'll be making my second trip to France this summer to see our French fans.
You sound so lively and full of life, which is so wonderful. I mean, you're 70.
Not bad for 75, huh?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, well, you never know how people are going to. I interviewed Charlotte Ray from Facts of Life, and she wasn't wasn't as sprite as you are, but you know.
Well, she's a little bit. Charlotte is a little bit older than.
Yeah, you know a lot of people.
I do. I guess it's just a friendly height. You know what, David?
You could probably dial most of them right now and just say hello. And what a wonderful thing to be able to do. So many famous people. I have a thing for famous people. I think I've always enjoyed talking to famous people. I just feel special somehow.
I know what you mean. Me too. I mean, I came to L.A. I left Yuba City. I was born in a farm town, Yuba City, California. My dad was a peach rancher, and my mom was a school teacher. And I, at 17, because I wasn't a very good student, you know, I never paid attention. I didn't care for school. Ironic that I would become a school teacher on TV. Huh?
Right, exactly, definitely.
But I came down to Los Angeles when I was 17, and I too was awed, you know, by the the first, you know, first person I met professionally. My very first job at 19 was on Loretta Young show.
Right.
Now, Loretta Young, I mean, there might be a lot of listeners who don't know who that was, but she was a huge movie star. And she had a television show, an hour show on Sunday nights that she hosted. And, you know, she would introduce the show, and then sometimes she'd be in it, and sometimes they had guest stars, and I happened to be one of their first guest stars, although I wouldn't call me a star because nobody had ever seen me before. But I really had fun. She was just so glamorous, and every time I work with somebody that I work with, Jimmy Stewart and Henry Fonda, and I could hardly speak to them. You know, they were just such icons.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I've known a lot of people where that was the business I was in. You know, it was my job.
Well, it's funny because my mom was a huge Loretta Young fan. I mean, absolutely huge. She, one of her favorite actresses. She used to talk about her all the time.
I bet she watched that Sunday night show.
Oh, absolutely. She watched everything Loretta Young ever did.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, when we were in California, we had a chance to meet her, but my mom, for some reason, was a little shy and didn't want to disturb her. They even told us where she was going to be, and we could go up and say hello, and I was excited, but my mom wouldn't do it. She was a little scared. She didn't want to bother her.
I know what you mean, and I've met people who have been frightened to meet me, and I'm just a twerk. I'm just a little, you know, blip on the radar. But, you know, people that have been fans of Little House for many, many years, I've had women just not be able to shake my hand. And I just try so hard to put them at ease and let them know that, you know, I'm just like them. You know, I'm in awe of all of this process, too. But, you know, it just happens.
You probably don't get followed around by the National Enquirer, I wouldn't think.
Oh, I did. I actually did an interview with the National Enquirer, and I can't imagine what their headline is going to be. I mean, you've read my book.
Yeah.
I've got a lot of kind of interesting things in there, and, you know, men in my life, and addiction, and alcoholism, and all kinds of things that I have, you know, gone through, cancer. I know it's going to be some horrible headline. But the man I talked to was so nice. And Harlan, my publicist, as you know, said he was just one of the nicest guys. So I just put myself in his hands and trusted. And so we'll see. We'll see what comes out.
We'll see. And well, probably everybody wants to hear about Michael Landon. Like, what was it like working with Michael Landon? I mean, he was such an icon and such a father figure, for a huge father figure. And we all thought of him like as really like our own father, almost.
I totally agree. And I think that was part of the popularity of Little House on the Prairie, is because, you know, with so many dysfunctional families, you know, around the world, and you see somebody like Pa and Ma and the innocence of Laura Ingalls and their country life, you know, making a go in a new town and meeting new people, and I can see why he was so popular. But on a personal level, I had such admiration for him. In fact, when I was auditioning for the part of Miss Beadle, the teacher on Little House, I had no idea Michael Landon was involved. Not a clue. I got a call from my agent to go to Paramount Studios, and it was for something called Little House. I couldn't remember. What was it? I don't know. Anyway, you know, in those days, I was going on hundreds of interviews, and you go on an interview, you read for a part, and then you go home and you forget it. Because, you know, 19 times out of 20, you don't get the part.
Right.
And you don't hope, and they never call you. And, you know, so that was my habit of just going, reading for a part, saying thank you, and then go home and go about my business. And I walk into this room. Excuse me. And there's five men in the room. Producer, obviously, behind the desk. I look around the room, and there sits Michael Landon. Well, I don't know if you've ever met him or seen him in person.
No, never have.
But you cannot take your eyes off of him. He's so riveting. He's so beautiful. And he was so sweet. He was so nice. Well, I had done several episodes of Bonanza. I had never worked with Michael, but he obviously saw them because I'm sure he watched Bonanza. Most actors do when they're on a show.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, hi. And because I was reading the part of a school teacher, I turned to Ed Friendly, the producer, and I said, excuse me, but may I sit behind your desk? And he looked at me like, okay, and got up and moved over to one of where the chair was I was supposed to sit in. And I sat behind the desk, and I told him to be quiet, and I told him to listen. And then I proceeded to read the scene with the casting director, who read the parts of Laura and Mary. And I was done, and they said, thank you. And I went home. And I had no idea what the show was about or anything. So my agent calls and says, yes, they would like you to play Miss Beadle, and they want to sign you for 4 years. Well, you know what that means to an actor?
No, absolutely.
You know, who lives day to day going on interviews. I thought I'd won the lottery. So I thought, oh my gosh, I better find out what this book is about. I thought it was one book. So I went, I found a copy of it at a swap meet. And I picked it up, and in the first chapter, the dog dies and Mary goes blind.
Right.
I thought, what is this movie? What is this about? And then, of course, I learned that it was a series of, I think it's 7 to 9 books, and that it was a classic, and it was true, and it was the life and times of Laura Ingalls Wilder. And I was just hooked. So, I think I'm the luckiest person alive. My best friend Mickey used to say, Charlotte, you could fall down a manhole and come up with a set of dishes. Because I just ran into such luck in my career.
Now, is Miss Beadle the name of the teacher in the books, too?
Yes.
It is. That's really her name.
Beadle. She was a real person. And Laura writes very little about her. I think she says, she's so pretty, Pa, and she smells good. That was all I had to go on.
That sounds like something that you can hear Melissa Gilbert saying that.
Yeah.
Melissa Gilbert is such an interesting person. I mean, she must have been a lot of fun to work with. I mean, she's just...
Oh, gosh. She was adorable when she was little. I mean, she's adorable now. I adore her, and I so respect her for the life she's led and, you know, the responsibility she's taken on. I mean, she just had to drop out of her run for Congress because of her back issues. She had a terrible accident when she was on the road with the musical Little House on the Prairie. She played Ma, and she took a really bad fall and broke her back.
Oh, I didn't know that.
She's had recurring problems with it. Even she was on Dancing with the Stars and had to drop out because she fell again.
Now she's married to Timothy Busfield now.
Yes, yes.
I mean, who would have thought that would happen? I was like, what?
Oh, well, you know, us actors, you know, we weave quite a web.
Well, you've had quite an interesting life, to say the least interesting. I mean,
thank you.
The alcohol, the drugs, and a lot of different things. So you've been through an awful lot. But the question is, how have you survived?
Oh, gosh, I think I just am a optimistic person. You know, I did hit a really bad spell back in the I'd say late 70s. It was after I left Little House on the Prairie. And
it must have been hard.
It was extremely hard because, you know, during the Little House years when I was working on there, it was so joyful. And, you know, my health was really good. My life was good. You know, I was making very good money for the first time in my whole career. And I hired a business manager, and we invested in things, and it was very exciting. I didn't pay much attention, you know. I just let him handle everything, and as it turns out, I should have paid more attention because he was addicted to cocaine, which I didn't know. Almost everywhere you went, if you went to a party in the 70s, there was cocaine there, you know. It was all around, and I dabbled in it, too, and... But my first love was drinking, you know. And
what did drinking do for you? Was it just a way to soothe your nerves, or what was it?
I don't know. I don't think I had any nerves. I think I just I grew up with it. You know, I grew up in the late 40s, early 50s, and that was the social, thing that my parents had. Yuba City was a very small town, and we used to have, my parents had cocktail parties, or went to cocktail parties every weekend, and it was all, to me, it was all very glamorous, you know, the names of the drinks, and the ladies all dressed up with their jewelry and their painted fingernails and highballs and all of that. So it never, I never had any fear of drinking. I didn't realize that I had a penchant for overdoing it. And I always identified with people who were doing the same thing as I was and saying, well, I'm okay because I'm not doing anything more than anybody else. But I was. And my friends tried to tell me, you know, you're overdoing it. You're doing too much. And without paying attention to what was happening with my money or investments and stuff, I woke up one day broke, had lost my house to foreclosure, and I had to go house sit with friends, you know, for quite a while. Felt very sorry for myself, increased my drinking. Until 1984, I was finally talked into going into a recovery program, treatment, at a hospital in Beverly Hills. And that literally saved my life.
That's great. I mean, what a success story you are as a result. I mean, you've just survived so much. And it's good to know for other people who have gone through it, you can make it through it. You can.
That's why I didn't try to cover it up, you know, write a little puff piece that, you know, Miss Beadle is, you know, Charlotte Stewart is just like Miss Beadle and blah, blah, blah. I wasn't. So if somebody identifies with my story or has a child or a brother or sister or mom or dad that they recognize the symptoms, you know, God bless them. I hope that they know that there's treatment available, there's help available everywhere. But it was so rampant in those days that I really wasn't paying attention. You know, I was just having a good time until the bottom fell out.
It's interesting. I mean, what you were making in a little house at the time was probably a lot of money, but today it seems like a small amount, I'm sure, if you told
exactly.
Us.
Exactly. I thought I had won the lottery. You know, it was the most money I'd ever made. And like I say, I had investments, and we had all kinds of things going on that would protect my future and all. Well, it was being siphoned away. And I had brought friends in to sign up with this business manager. And they lost everything, too. I mean, it was so tragic. And there was no recourse because he died a couple of years later. You know, there was no prosecution or anything. And I just felt so responsible for my friends who had lost their, you know, money, too. But life goes on, as they say.
Your friendship with David Lynch is so interesting. I mean, I'm so jealous. I mean, what an unusual man he must be. I can only imagine what he's like to have dinner with.
You should have seen him when he was young. You know, I was living out in Topanga Canyon, which is a rural area outside of Los Angeles. It was, you know, a lot of rock and roll, and you know, it was kind of the place to be in those days. And my roommate came home, and she was working as a volunteer at the American Film Institute. And she came home and she said, I'm working on this movie with the student director, and he's looking for an actress. And I told him my roommate was an actress, so he's coming to dinner.
So, what? Just like that?
Just like that. That's how I met David.
And you had what was your first impression when you met him?
Well, he was the strangest guy at the time. He had wearing khakis and a tan shirt, or a blue shirt, blue work shirt with the holes in the elbows and the holes in the elbows of his jacket, and a hat, a Panama hat with an old beat up with a hole up in top, you know, where he'd grabbed it probably, you know, 200 times. And he was wearing two neckties. And I found out later, I didn't ask him at the time, why are you wearing two neckties? One was his everyday that he would pick out to wear every day. He always wore a shirt buttoned all the way up to the throat with a necktie. And the other one was his lucky tie. So he always wore two and sometimes three neckties.
That's amazing. I mean, it's so different. What a memorable guy.
He really is. I adore him. He's one of the most optimistic and cheerful people I have ever met. He's more optimistic than me. And when I first read the script for Eraserhead, I did not have a clue. I didn't know what it was about. And but that's okay. I don't have to know what it's all about. I follow the director's direction. That's my job.
Right.
And he led me through it very carefully. He's very specific in his direction. He knows how he wants you to hold your hand and when to reach for something or how to do something or the timing. He'd say, do this until you see me signal not to do it anymore. I don't know if you remember in Eraserhead, there's a scene where Mary, my character, jumps out of bed and runs over and says, I can't take it anymore, I'm leaving, and you better take care of the baby. And she reaches under the bed, and you cannot figure out what she is doing. The bed is shaking and shaking and shaking and shaking. And finally, she pulls out a suitcase that obviously had been stuck under the bed, and she had pulled and pulled and pulled and pulled. Well, it goes on forever, just getting the suitcase out, but you don't know what it is. So, I mean, he loves these kind of odd predicaments he puts people in. And so that I just did what he said. And
now, when you met him, did you really think you'd become friends with him?
Well, I didn't know. When we started working, I thought this was going to be, because I used to do student films all the time. You know, I think it's really important that a student filmmaker work with professionals, because that's what they're who they're going to be working with when they, you know, get their jobs. So I had done several, which didn't do anything, never saw them again. And so I thought this was going to be kind of the same thing. And I thought I could toss it off in 3 or 4 days. It was 4 years that I ended up working on Eraserhead. All through the time, I was working on The Waltons in 1972 and Little House on the Prairie in 73. And thank God I kept date books. I have always kept an appointment book, you know. Like, you are right at the top of my Monday to June 6th appointment book.
Wow, I'm honored.
And well, I kept all these books. I have 50 years of books that I didn't remember until Andy and I were writing the book. And I thought, wait a minute, what date was that I did such and such? Oh, I know, I can go look up at my appointment book. And he was stunned that I had kept all these, you know, books. With every interview I'd ever gone on and every day I worked and who I went out with and where I had dinner and all of it wasn't a diary. I never wrote thoughts. I only wrote events.
Mm-hmm.
So that really came in handy when we were writing this book.
But say, so, and you never wrote your thoughts on anything. That's interesting.
No.
Just
no.
So how did you remember all the different ways you felt during all these times?
Oh gosh.
It was just
I remember. He says I have a great memory.
You must.
When I started telling him stories, he'd say, when was that? And I'd say, okay, I have to figure out where I was living, what car I was driving, who I was seeing, and then I can figure out the date. But I guess I remembered quite a bit.
You're blessed with a great memory. I've always wished I had a better memory than I do. You know, as you get older, it gets harder, as you know. And
oh, absolutely. Yep, except I've got my date book.
But, I mean, working, the pilot for Twin Peaks, the original Twin Peaks, was an amazing, absolutely amazing. To this day, I still remember how wonderful those 2 hours were. I believe it was four, it might have been 4 hours that was really, really great. I mean, it's just going on and on from there, and then, I mean, as the seasons went on, it got stranger and stranger. That's how I felt, anyway.
I have a theory about that. I think it was because David went off to do other things. He went back to doing feature films again. And, you know, try as you might, if you're a director or writer and you're working with David Lynch, and David Lynch is not around, I think the temptation is to do Lynch-isms.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Bring in quirky characters just for the sake of quirky characters. David never did that. He always had a completely thought out plan as to why, you know, somebody was you know, dressed as a woman or had hearing aids on or, you know, had 15 donuts in front of them or, you know, I mean, he had a plan in mind. But when you just start throwing in odd characters for the sake of it, it's not going to work, you know. And now, I think that's what happened.
Now, how many episodes of the original Twin Peaks were you in?
Oh, probably seven or eight. Total. Some of them were, you know, just almost background, like the Laura Palmer's funeral. Actually, I made a decision to do something that day that I didn't tell anybody about, and nobody noticed except the fans, that I wore a happy face button to Laura Palmer's funeral. That was my character, Betty Briggs, was an optimist. She wants people to, you know, now, there. It's okay. Everything's going to be fine.
Right.
That's her character. And so that was my own decision, but nobody noticed. David wasn't on the set that day. Mark Frost didn't notice. Nobody in the cast noticed.
Really?
The fans noticed, and I started getting happy face everything. And now there's tarot cards with my character. There's little Twin Peaks tarot cards, and my character is a
Are
great
they really?
Happy face. Yeah.
I think I bought Laura Palmer's diary at one point to read it because it was so fascinating.
Yeah, by Jennifer Lynch.
Yeah,
daughter wrote that.
What's that now? His daughter did. Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, Jennifer Lynch wrote that, who is now directing like crazy. She's doing a lot of the Walking Dead series and whatever those others. Yeah, she is working on
Walking Dead's my favorite.
Well, she directs them.
That's amazing.
Yeah, and there's some other series that's on now, something about zombies or dead or whatever, and I see her on Facebook all the time with, you know,
I'll have to look her up. I didn't even know. I didn't make that connection that she would be.
Yeah, please do, because she's terrific. I adore her, and I've known her since she was a baby.
Right. Now, we can't talk about the new Twin Peaks at all. We can hardly even mention it.
Yes, we can mention it. I can't tell you anything about the story.
Right.
I can tell you I'm in it.
but you know
I am because I was up there.
Well, are you allowed to tell me who else is in it?
No,
You can't even do that.
No, but I'm sure if you go on the internet, I think you can probably Google. There was a list online because I saw it. It was a list of 271 characters in the new Twin Peaks, and it had an asterisk beside the ones who were returning in their original role.
Oh, really? That's interesting.
So
I have to check that out.
You can go look that up. I saw it online, so I'm not telling you anything out of, you know.
Right. We're not going to get you in trouble. We're not going to have to make you pay some money or something. You know?
No. In fact, I can't even tell my husband, you know, the scene I was in. But it's fun. It's really fun. And I had a good time. I was back up in North Bend, Washington. Do you remember the log lady?
Oh, of course, yes, Catherine Coulson. Yeah.
Yeah, she passed away last year.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, she had lung cancer, and she called me up about, I don't know, 6 months before that and said, I'm not telling anybody, but I want you to know, because we had become dear, dear friends. And she said, I have lung cancer, and I'm fine now, you know, but I don't know how things are going to go. And then I saw her a year ago up in North Bend. There's a festival every year celebrating Twin Peaks that I've been going to for, I think this is my 26th year. They've invited me. And I was supposed to meet her up in North Bend when I was shooting the new show, and she didn't make it, and she died 4 days later, but I saw her a year ago, and she was so gracious. You could tell she had lost a lot of weight, and she was wearing a wig and a very jaunty hat, and she was charming and signed autographs and was just as, you know, lovely as she could be, and then before 6 months was out, she was gone.
Now, did she bring a log with her to these things?
Yes, she does.
She's
not allowed. You know, she keeps the original log in a safety deposit box.
Seriously?
Because the airlines, she doesn't want to check it because she's afraid it'll get lost. And if you've ever lost your luggage, you know it can happen.
Oh, yeah.
And they will not let her bring it into the cabin of the airplane. So she would always show up with a replica, a little twig of some kind that looks like the log. And then fans would bring her logs to sign. And
oh, my gosh.
Was just so gracious. She was just wonderful.
That's funny. I mean, the whole, I mean, you have to see the humor in the original Twin Peaks. I mean, there is a lot of humor, the apple pie and the, you know, what they used to talk about. And
Oh, I know.
Just
yeah.
The atmosphere of the whole show is just amazing. It's like, wow, this
Black
is really creepy.
And then you have people like David Bowie and David Duchovny. David Duchovny, is that how you say it?
David Duchovny.
Yeah, Duchovny, showing up in drag.
What was David Duchovny like? Did you get to meet him at all?
I didn't. I wasn't in any scenes with him, but I saw, you know, the pictures and all. And of course, I saw him on the series, but he was playing an FBI agent who was in drag, not as a disguise. That was him, you know. And, I mean, just wonderful actors that David lured into Twin Peaks. And to tell you the truth, I don't know who's in the new one. There could be some incredible surprises.
Really? I wonder what night of the week it's going to be on when it finally does air.
No idea. It's Showtime, and I heard that it was going to debut around this time next year.
Around this time next year. So summer of next year.
Yeah.
I can't imagine what... They usually have stuff on like Sunday night, so maybe it'll be on a Sunday night.
I hope so.
There's so many. Trouble is now there's so much good stuff on Sunday nights. It's hard to pick. You know, where do I start?
Well, you can set your recorder.
There you go. You can watch it on demand.
Set your recorder and then watch your football game or your baseball game or whatever else you're watching live. And then record it for the time when you can sit down and really run back and forth.
Right. You seem like you're very, very happy now. Have you ever been this happy before?
Well, I go through, you know, ups and downs in my life. I was, when I moved up to Napa, I moved here with my late husband, David Banks, as he had emphysema. And we needed to get out of Los Angeles. So I kind of took an early retirement. And we moved up here because my family is nearby. And I thought, you know, this is gonna be good for me to be close to family later on because I knew that he was in serious health problems. And he did pass away in 2012.
Oh, I'm sorry.
But I decided to stay up here. I just saw my sister yesterday and had breakfast with my brother last weekend. And, you know, I would see them twice a year when I lived in L.A. with, you know, 30 other people. So it's very joyous right now. And I just got married again.
Wow. Is he in the entertainment business?
Not at all. He's completely baffled by the whole thing. He is, he deals in meteorites. He's been all over the world.
Meteorites.
You know. Meteorites, yes.
Of all things, you know.
Rocks from space, yeah.
That's great. So as long as you're happy, it doesn't matter, you know?
No. But I enjoy learning about his, you know, job, and he's fascinated with my stuff. We're leaving for Richmond, Virginia Thursday to go back to the Great Southern celebration of Twin Peaks.
Mm-hmm.
There. So,
and yeah. will a lot of the original cast members be there?
Several of them, yeah. Kimmy Richards will be there, who played Lucy. The receptionist in the sheriff's office.
Oh, okay. Right.
Sheriff, the phone is online too.
It's been so many years since I've seen that show. It's hard. I remember certain.
You won't be able to miss Lucy. I mean, she's one of a kind.
I still remember the scene where Bob is leaping over the sofa and he comes right at the camera. That scene freaked me out when I first saw it. I mean,
Do you know the story behind that?
No.
Bob, the man that played Bob, was a prop man on the show. And they were shooting a scene with Grace Zabriskie. She was on the sofa.
Oh, she's a great actress.
Yeah, she's wonderful. I just saw her recently at the cast party. She's great. He was a prop guy, and he ducked out of the shot. He was setting something, and they started rolling, and he ducked out of the shot, but he didn't duck far enough. and you could see him at the end of the sofa. And David, when he saw the dailies, said, okay, we're going to use this. And that's how Bob was created.
Creepy Bob. Boy, he was really creepy.
He was. And this is the nicest guy in the whole world. He was so sweet.
You wouldn't know it from looking at him on TV, that's for sure.
No, I know. Isn't that interesting? Now, there's an instance where something happened by accident. David saw it and loved it and said, we're going to use that. And that's how, you know, he shot those things of, you know, Bob leaping over this, because that's where he was originally seen by the camera. So it was a total accident.
Now, I love it that during Little House, when you were filming Little House, you always got to leave at 6 o'clock. Michael Landon was always strict about being done at 6 o'clock every night.
Well, I think when he came, you know, I don't know how they shot on Bonanza, because I don't remember. I did several Bonanzas, but I never worked with Mike. But I had done plenty of other TV shows where sometimes you would work till 9, 10 o'clock. And then you have a 6 a.m. call the next day. And it just screws up your family, your dinner, everything. Michael said, you know, there's no excuse for that. If you're organized, if you know what you're doing. And, Mike, I don't know if you know a lot about shooting television or films. Usually, they do the whole scene in what's called a master, where they go through the entire scene with movements and everything from beginning to end. Then they go back and they'll do a two-shot and a single and an over-the-shoulder and an all of those. Well, Michael knew how it was going to get edited. He wrote the script, usually. So he would shoot. He would start the master right up until he knew the editors were not going to use the whole rest of it, and he'd just say, cut. Okay, let's go in. So he saved hours and hours of time.
He must have been a brilliant man.
He knew what he was doing. He was raised in the business.
And what a fun guy too. I mean, did that laugh alone and just made you.
Oh, and you heard that a lot, especially with we had so many children on the show, and of course they adored him.
Mm-hmm.
He was like their pa, and I know it was fun to be around, because the set was tons of children, parents, because every child has to have a guardian or a parent with them.
Right.
And then they had the school teachers there, so the kids would go into school when they'd take a break from shooting, and while we're setting up for the next shot, the kids would go back into school, and then they would get their 45 minute recess or break. And Mike always had some fun things on the set for them to do, and he didn't have an entourage. You know, he didn't. He shared a clapboard dressing room with Victor French. He didn't have some big Winnebago out there with.
That's a shame.
You know,
what happened between
hanging out.
Yeah, that's a shame what happened between the two of them.
I know. He had none of that. He was down to earth, funny, very irreverent, played practical jokes, loved to embarrass people, and he was just really fun to be around. And I'm just glad I got to be around him for 4 years.
I didn't know the whole story behind the feud that he had with the Victor and Michael had together. I didn't know what had happened.
Yeah, he went on to do Highway to Heaven, and then he was doing another series when he was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer. Mm-hmm. And because I had lost my mother to the same thing, I knew when I heard it that he didn't have long. But he was going on the Tonight Show and doing push-ups and saying, look, I feel great,
Right. He didn't look so great on the Tonight Show, though, unfortunately.
You didn't think so? I couldn't tell. I couldn't tell. I didn't know much about it at the time.
He just looked really, really thin. I think that's what scared me more than anything, the fact that he looked so thin.
That's what happens, You can't digest food anymore. And so you have no nutrients, and so you lose weight. And yeah, that's the...
I can't imagine what that would be like to go through. Just the thought of it makes me,
Well, I went through it with my mom. In fact, I've got a funny story if you got a minute.
Yeah, sure.
Well, my mom was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer in 1972, in the summertime. And I was living with a man, Robert Greenfield, who was a writer for Rolling Stone.
Mm-hmm.
And he was on tour with the Stones writing a book called The Stones Touring Party, STP. And we flew to San Francisco to, because the Stones were going to be there, and I was all excited about that. And I got a call from my sister that my mom was in the hospital in San Francisco and had been diagnosed with cancer. So I went to see my mom, and it was like, you know, it was just a blur of, you know, new information and awful information. And I was supposed to go see the Rolling Stones that night, you know, with Robert. And my nephew dropped me off at the theater. And here I was in, you know, the best seat in the house and a balcony overlooking the stage. And the Stones were there and, you know, Jagger and Richards and everybody. And my mind was complete blank. And we spent the rest of the evening trying to avoid paparazzi and jumping from limo to limo and going to restaurants. And I wish I could have appreciated all that, you know, amazing event, but I couldn't. And later that year, my sister called and said that my mom had taken a turn for the worse, so I went home and stayed with her and her last week. And we watched television together, and, you know, we just kind of hung out. And on one night when we were watching TV, I was on two television shows.
That's
one after
cool.
another on the same network. It was either, you know, CBS at 8 and CBS at 9, and I had the lead in both shows playing different characters. In one, I was a blind heiress being kidnapped, mm-hmm. and in the other, I was a prisoner being transported on a jail bus. And in those days, you provided your own wardrobe, and I was wearing the same thing in both shows.
Really?
And my mom got such a kick out of that. But anyway, that a couple of days later, it was clear that she wanted to go get in the hospital, and it was going to be over. And so my brother scooped her up, drove her to the hospital, and I was left at the house. And then I thought, oh my God, I've got to go to the hospital. So I jumped in my mother's car. And that was 1973. Jumped in my mom's car. I lit up a joint, smoking on the way to the hospital, and I got stopped. I was in my hometown, Yuba City. I got stopped by a cop who I'd gone to school with. I threw the joint on the floor, opened the windows, and prayed that he wouldn't notice. He didn't. He gave me a speeding ticket, mm-hmm. and I proceeded to go on to the hospital to see my mom, and I got there after she had been sedated with morphine, and so I was like, oh, no, I'm too late. I kind of plopped myself on the edge of her bed, and I said to my sister, you're not going to believe what happened. I'm on my way here in Mom's car. I'm smoking a joint. I get stopped. I threw it on the floor. It was Ron Carticelli who stopped me. I got a ticket, and I said, I figured if he noticed anything, I was going to tell him the joint was Mom's. And my mother burst out laughing.
Oh,
in
great.
Her coma. She heard every word and burst out laughing.
That's amazing. I mean, you're such a good caregiver. I mean, I can tell by the way you described taking care of David so well as you did.
Yeah.
And well, women are so strong. Women have so much more strength than men as far as caregiving.
I don't know. I don't know about that.
Well, in my experience,
we have to do what's put in front of us.
Well, I'm one of seven kids, and when my mom was sick, the girls were the ones that really took care of everything. So that, in my experience, the women are the stronger ones. Yeah, there are some strong men. There are some men that really do a good job too. But it seems like it's more women. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong about that. But
not to change the subject, but my sister had seven children. And she's the one I based the character of Miss Beadle on because of her patience and the way she handled all these babies. You know, they were like 2 years apart, all seven of them. Mm-hmm. I don't know where you were in the middle of the seven. You the youngest?
I'm the third from the oldest, so.
Yeah, okay. Oh, you got the brunt of it, didn't you?
Yeah. Well, my dad,
for a while.
The girls could do no wrong for the dad, for my dad. He always had a thing for the girls. So I was more of a mama's boy, really, than anything.
Well, dads are like that, aren't they? My dad was like that with me.
Yeah.
I was the baby of the family. In fact, the first movie I ever did was this really bad movie called Damaged Goods, the first movie. Loretta Yashar was the first professional thing I did, but this movie I did, and it played my hometown drive-in, played the drive-in in Yuba City. Mm-hmm. And my dad went every single night in his pickup truck.
Wow. That's good. Now, you also tried your hand at soap operas, but you weren't really fond of soap operas.
I didn't get the whole procedure. I was very uncomfortable. I was on Young and the Restless for a short while.
12 episodes, according to IMDb. Now that's where I'm going with them. But so you didn't really like that. It's a pretty fast paced environment.
Well, they do it all. I mean, I grew up in the business doing, you know, cut, okay, let's do it again a different way. Let's, you know, if you flubbed a line, you could just go up and they'd say, that's okay, we're just shoot again. Can't do that in a soap opera. It's live, basically. It's live taped. But it was very uncomfortable thing for me. But thank God my character went into a coma and I was in a hospital for about the last 5 shows.
There you go. You didn't have much work to do, did you?
I didn't have to do anything but lie in bed.
I mean, you've been on so many different shows and so many different things. I mean, you've had a wonderful career. I mean,
I'm just so lucky.
And you seem like you're one of those. I mean, you look at the pictures of you when you were young, and you just look like one of those people that people would just come up to and talk to and want to be friends with. I mean,
I am one of those people, and I am able to experience that on a daily basis, practically. I mean, I live in a small town now, not as small as Yuba City, but Napa, and most people here haven't got a clue about my background or anything about me. They don't know anything I've done, and that's fine. But I go on these junkets for Little House and Twin Peaks, and the fans are just amazing, and I really try. They spared no expense to get to these events, you know.
And they feel like they know you. I mean, they feel like
they do, and they've driven hundreds of miles, and I'm not going to give them a, yeah, thanks, I'll sign this, goodbye. I can't do that. I got to look them in the eye, thank them, talk to them. I mean, that's the least I can do.
Right. I saw the reunion show on the Today Show with some of the Little House. Of course, you weren't on
that. Oh, I know.
I guess
they
didn't
invite me.
They didn't ask you. Why not?
I don't know.
But Karen Grassley was just so fascinating to listen to. I mean, I mean, she was always an interesting person. I mean, seeing her on the show, it was such emotional depth that she had.
Yeah,
you know?
Well, she has you should, you know, if you look her up on IMDb, she's got a great background. And I just had lunch with her the other day. My husband and I went over to her house.
Really?
And, you know, yeah, she lives near me. She lives near Berkeley.
Oh, how cool is that?
North of San Francisco, and she's writing a book now. So
she is.
I have no idea when it's. You know, she's still in the early stages, and but she's very serious about it. She's been writing it for a couple of years, and
I wonder if Harlan's handling her. I'd love to interview her too. What an interesting take on.
I'm gonna tell her that's what she has to do, because you know that quite frankly, without somebody to, you know, contact reviewers or interviewers, you know, nobody will know anything about your book. And that's that's the inside scoop. I had no idea.
Right.
But Allison, with Harlan, and she said, you've got to talk to Harlan. You've got to, you know, so Andy Dembski and I hired Harlan to, you know, help us through all this maze. And it's priceless.
Harlan, I don't know how I got hooked up with Harlan. I don't even remember the first time I did, but he's just the most amazing human being you'd ever want to meet.
Yep. Yep. He's very thorough. And every week, weekend, he sends me the update for the following week. You know, what time, who, what station, you know, all.
How do you keep up your energy? You sound like you have a huge amount of energy.
I do.
Where does that come from? How do you keep it up? I mean,
I don't know. I love life. I have to be creative, and I have a studio in my home, and I don't know if you've ever heard anyone talk about Beetle bags.
No, other than your book, of course.
Yeah, Beetle bags. I support a cancer program in Napa called the Wellness Center. and it's a post-surgical program for cancer patients. And having gone through cancer myself and having no help whatsoever after, you know, my surgery and chemo and all that, I came across this program in Napa that is so wonderful. So what I've done, is I take pictures from Little House on the Prairie, and I put them on tote bags, and I sell them at all of my Little House events, and then I make them also for Twin Peaks events.
That's neat.
And I sell them online, and I just shipped 40 bags to Green Bay, Wisconsin, where I'm going to be in July, and 25 bags to the museum in Minnesota, and I have a following. So I get up every day, and Michael and I have our coffee, and then I come into my studio, and I work from 10 to 4 every day.
Oh, that's so cool. It's so nice to see you. You got
to
keep up. I mean, if you stop working, it's like you become this, I don't know.
Yeah.
A lot of people, they retire, and then they get sick and die. And they, you know,
Exactly.
And who wants to be like that, you know?
No. And my husband works every day, too. He's always, you know, doing something new. He's got all these meteorites that he's, you know, getting ready. We're going to a show next weekend, not this coming, but the following weekend in Cambria in Morro Bay to, you know, buy and sell rocks from space. And I work with him when he goes on his trips, and he goes with me when I do mine.
Now, as far as you're doing the Twin Peaks, and we can't talk about that, obviously, but is there any other acting possibilities in the future for you?
So far, not that I've heard, but I still have an agent, and I have a manager, and, you know, they work together. And something, you know, I'm 75, and there's not a whole lot of work once you pass 40. I think that was part of my problem.
Unless your name is Betty White.
Yeah, unless you're Betty White, and there's nobody like Betty White. Great.
There really isn't.
Yeah.
I got a chance.
I would love to work again, and every once in a while I'll get a call from somebody that says, would you be interested in, or, of course. But, you know.
And you worked on one of my favorite movies, Tremors.
What? Tremors.
Oh, I love that movie, and I have to admit I don't remember seeing you in the movie because it's been so many years. But I'll have to go back
and watch it. I'll tell you who I was. I played Nancy, and when the graboids hit our little town, I'm on the roof, and they rescue me. I'm in the tractor trailer with my little girl, Mindy.
Mm.
She's on the pogo stick, and Mindy, get off the pogo stick. So I'm there with everybody, but, you know, I don't have a huge feature part, but I am with the whole, you know, with the whole movie. So, and in Tremors 3, with Mindy and I come back 10 years later. She's now 21. And we're living in the same town, and we end up catching the graboid.
Hmm. Interesting.
I don't know if you ever saw Tremors 3.
You know, I don't think I have. I didn't think the sequels would be as good, so I didn't watch them. But
they're not. They're not as good. No, the first one was, you know.
It was an amazing movie. I mean, Reba McEntire, what the hell is she doing in this movie?
Oh, my God. That was her first part. In fact, I showed her how to hit her mark. She'd never done that before. She's, you know, been on stage and forever.
Right.
But, you know, when you're doing an ensemble piece with, you know, 7 or 8 other actors and you have to hit a certain mark and stuff, she was like, well, how do you do that without looking down? And I said, well, and I showed her how you kind of eyeball the spot without looking directly at it.
What a tremendous lady she must be to know.
Yeah.
Just the energy.
I so enjoyed getting to know her. I was there. We were in Lone Pine, California for about 6 weeks altogether. So, you know, we got to know each other. She got married while she was there. That was when her husband got married in Lake Tahoe.
She's got those expressions on her face a lot of times, like Lucille Ball had, you know, those wonderful expressions.
Yeah.
That is so priceless for TV, you know, and just an amazing. I mean, and you were on Bachelor Father. I mean, you've done so many different shows.
Yeah,
I mean.
My three sons I met my first husband, Tim Considine.
Now, Bachelor Father, that was the one with John Forsythe, correct?
John Forsythe.
What was he like?
Doreen Cochran. Well, I didn't really get to know him very well. You know, I was literally a kid then. I mean, I was probably 20 years old or something when I did that. I mean, he was very handsome, and he was, you know, a movie star of sorts then, too.
And you were on my mom's favorite show, Hawaii Five-0. My mom just was obsessive about Hawaii Five-0. I mean...
original with Jack Lord.
Right. Not that. My mother, she died in 2007, so she didn't even get to see the remake that they did, which she wouldn't have liked anyway without Jack Lord. Forget it. It wouldn't have been anything.
Yeah, no. Oh, she was an odd character. Truly. He wouldn't do a scene facing a certain direction if the wind blew his hair the wrong way.
He had to
swear to God.
And apparently his wife was very protective of him in later years too.
I think so. I don't know really what the did he pass?
Oh yeah, he's gone. Yeah,
I have no idea. But he was the king of the islands. I'll tell you that. You know, he ruled.
But I think he was in westerns before that, years before that, if I remember correctly.
I did a series called Stony Burke.
Right.
That he was in. And I don't remember a thing about it, but it's in my resume.
Oh yeah, 1963, when I was 1 year old.
Oh my God, you puppy! You puppy.
Well, I was 1 year old. You wouldn't even have known what it was at the time.
I know.
But I mean, it's got to feel good. And here you are at 75, and you've had this wonderful career, and you met so many. In fact, Harrison Ford was at a wedding you were at.
He came to my wedding.
He came to your wedding. Yeah, he came to your wedding. Amazing.
My wedding. I didn't know him. I don't even know if I met him while he was there, but he came with a friend of mine who was at the wedding. My second husband, Jordan Hahn, and I were married at Karen Black's house.
Karen Black. What an unusual lady.
What a crazy person. Oh, my God. And I had called her. I had met her because a friend of mine was married to her, Kit Carson. And I called and asked if I could be married in their backyard, that we wouldn't use the house, that, you know, the caterer would use the kitchen briefly, but everything else would be outside. And she was so sweet and said, of course. So we had this wonderful wedding outside, and I look over, and there's Harrison Ford.
I mean, if it were me, I'd go up and say, I guess at the time, he wasn't as huge as, of course, he is today. But
well, I don't think Star Wars had just come out. I think it had just come out.
And who knew it was going to be that big? I mean, that huge.
Yeah, huge. Really.
If you could have picked the show to be on that you weren't on, what would it have been?
Oh, gosh, I can't even think right now. I'm kind of blanking. I don't want to leave you with a lot of dead air.
No, that's fine.
I can't blank. But one show that I was on that I absolutely loved, you remember Patti LuPone in Life Goes On?
Yes, you mentioned that in your book,
which was a fabulous series about a family with a son with Down syndrome.
Right.
And the actor that played the son really did have Down syndrome.
Where is he today, I wonder?
Gosh, I don't know. I don't know. We could look him up, couldn't we?
Yeah, exactly. I'm just curious if he's still around, if he's still...
But I was such a fan of Patti LuPone. She's such a pro. She's so huge. I mean, I just loved working with her. But I got to play a very nasty woman who had a daughter with Down syndrome, and the actress that played my daughter did have Down syndrome. And the story was about a parent who would not recognize that her child had Down syndrome and was very adamant that nobody say it, and then the two Down syndrome children want to get married and have a knockdown drag out with Patti LuPone. Do you know what fun that was?
I can imagine. It must have been a lot of fun.
Oh boy, it was great.
And I remember there was an episode of St. Elsewhere one time where a woman knew she was going to have a Down syndrome baby, and the whole episode was whether she was going to abort the baby or not. I've never forgotten that episode. It was so powerfully done, and you know how that show was. And it was like, it really unsettled me. And I kept thinking, well, how could you kill a baby? How could you do that? In my mind, I could never accept that, you know, just being who I am.
I write about it in my book.
Right.
Because I got pregnant when I was 22, and it was a very inappropriate time for me. I didn't think I could raise a child alone, and I had to make a decision. And in those days, it was illegal. Right. And you couldn't go to a doctor to terminate a pregnancy. It was impossible. There was nowhere to go. So I went to Tijuana and had the most horrible, horrendous, painful, humiliating experience of my life. And I hope no woman ever has to go through that again. Now they're trying to change laws, you know, in different states so that to make it illegal and punishable by prison for doctors to do such a thing. It's terrible. I mean, we should have a choice. But that's my, you know.
Everybody's different. I mean, everybody, you know, you have to do what you feel is right. Now, like I said, I couldn't do it, but I can't judge other people for doing what they think is right.
People that will read that, you know, incident in my life and condemn me for it. But, you know, I was 22. I didn't know where to turn. It was just the only choice I had, I felt, at the time. That was a personal choice.
So were there any horrific events in your life that you didn't put in the book?
Oh, gosh. I don't think so.
Everything's out there. Everything is out there for us to know. Yeah, I think the National Enquirer is going to have a field day with you.
God, you've got to look for it, because I doubt that I'll be on any front page, but they're going to definitely do some sort of horrible headline, because that's what they do. And I almost said that I didn't want to do that interview, but Harlan said you have to, because the other choice is to let them just write it up. And I thought, no. And he swore that the reporter that was going to do the interview was the kindest and the best one. So I trust him.
Good for you. I should mention, I don't think I've mentioned this book's BearManorMedia.com is the name of the publisher.
Yes.
And not a real, real well-known publisher, but still. Is this book available on Amazon and all the bookstores?
It is. It is definitely available on Amazon. It's in hardback and soft cover. And, you can either get it through Bear Manor Publishing, or you can get it directly from Amazon.com. It's available now. Little House in the Hollywood Hills,
right.
A Bad Girl's Guide to Becoming Miss Beetle, Mary X and Me.
Right. I've never had an author say the name of their book at the end of the interview. That's interesting.
Really?
No, they never do. They always let me do it. So.
Oh, okay. Well, you can do it too.
Now I don't have to do it. You just took the work away from me. That's funny, though. I mean, you're such a fascinating lady. This has been a lot of fun. I really enjoyed it.
David, thank you so much. That means a lot to me. I try to stay one-on-one when I'm talking to anybody, but,
You still got Miss Beetle's personality, that's for sure. You just, it's
I
there.
Do.
And
well,
you will till the day you die.
Family, you know?
Right.
I told you I based my character on my sister, and she's one of the most optimistic people I've ever known.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Wonderful, wonderful. We've been talking for the whole hour to Charlotte Stewart, and the book again is called Little House in the Hollywood Hills, A Bear Girl's Guide to Becoming Miss Beetle, Mary X and Me. Thank you so much.
Has it been a whole hour?
Yeah, it's been over an hour. I know, it goes so fast, doesn't it? It's like
oh my God. Okay, well, I've enjoyed it thoroughly, David. Thank you.
Thank you. And this has been David's Book Talk, and we'll talk to you next time.
You have just enjoyed the podcast of David's Book Talk, brought to you by your host, book lover David English. Please visit us at davidbooktalk.com, follow us on Facebook and Twitter, and subscribe to our podcast. We want to hear from you, and we don't want you to miss our upcoming shows with top authors like Mary Higgins Clark, Patricia Cornwell, Lisa Scottolini, Jackie Collins, Nelson DeMille, Michael Connelly, Sue Grafton, Steve Martini, Dale Brown, David Baldacci.